back on the right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it. Well, now it is. Now it is. Okay. All right. It is 2:42 p.m. We are back on the record for OPA-PA-09-005 in the appeal of Guam Community Improvement Foundation, Inc. We are in the midst of our the purchasing agency's motion for confirmation of substantial interest. Pursuant to the September 16 scheduling order, we are still in the purchasing agency's presentation of evidence. We have just completed the testimony of Mrs. Mpinko, Mr. Abrams. You may call your next witness.
That would be the principal of the temporary facility, Mr. Ken Sharkalos. I feel mine on this line.
Certainly. And this is an administrative note for the parties. Be advised that on the left corner of my table, it appears that the corner of the table is coming up, so be careful as you're going after exhibits. I'll try to move them closer to the mic here.
Thank you.
Could you please leave your notes and documents with Mr. Abrams?
Over here. Just let me have that stuff.
All of them?
Yeah. You don't need them. We memorize
them. Okay, could you please remain standing to be sworn in? You can sign in, but don't stand up to be sworn in. Thank you.
You want me to stand?
Please stand. You can raise your right hand and be sworn.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony that you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes,
thank you. Thank you.
Your witness, Mr. Anderson.
Good afternoon, Mr. Sharkalos.
Good afternoon.
Would you please state the full name for the record, sir?
My name is Kenneth Paulini Chargala, and I am the school principal for John F. Kennedy High School.
Is that the temporary one out there at season?
That's right. That's where we are presently located at.
How long have you been out
there? 2 months, 3 months.
And how long has the school been there?
About good 2 or 3 months.
Do you remember when I came out? Talked to you and
so
you took me on a guided tour of the school last week.
That's correct.
You remember where I parked my car, maybe you didn't see, but that parking lot is accessible. My vehicle is going across a student walkway, isn't it?
That's correct.
So, in order for cars to get to that parking lot where I parked, cars have to go across an unmarked student walkway, is that correct?
That is correct.
That happens every day?
That's correct.
At random intervals?
That's correct.
Is that safe or unsafe?
We consider that unsafe.
Are there any lights or signs or signals to warn students or the drivers of a possible injurious collision?
There are none.
Something else I noticed out there that bothered me a bit. Did I see correctly that the track where you run is made out of concrete? Is that my imagination, or did I see that?
Well, that's an accurate assessment, not only concrete, but as well as asphalt.
Well, when runners, especially the female variety, run on a surface like that, is that injurious or beneficial to their hips?
It is injurious for the student's safety.
That's what I thought. You're aware of the contract, are you not, between the Guam Federation of Teachers and the school, is that correct?
Yeah, yes, I am quite familiar with the provisions of the Board Union contract, at least some provisions.
Well, is there any, that's a board or a union contract, isn't it?
That's right, it's between the Guam Education Policy Board and the Guam Federation of Teachers.
Well, is there anything in that documentation that talks about adequate restrooms?
That is correct, for teachers, correct.
Well, what's the situation with the adequacy of the bathrooms out there? Are there separate bathrooms for everybody, or is it different?
Well, the provision of the Board Union contract, if I recall, that the teachers are not required and they shall not use the same restroom facilities as the students. Presently, out of 155 teachers and staff, we only have about 5 to 6 commodes to accommodate 155 teachers and staff.
And that violates what?
That violates one of the provisions of the Board Union contract.
Mr. Abrams, could you talk into the mic just to make sure that we capture all your questions? Thank you.
What are unisex bathrooms?
Both gender share the same restroom facility.
Are there any so-called unisex bathrooms out there?
Well, we have designated those. We have 5 faculty lounge, both faculty and support staff using the same restroom facility, and there are about only 5 or 6.
So how many bathrooms are unisex in terms of their use right now?
There are about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 unisex, and only 1 commode in each of those unisex restrooms.
Is that a good situation or a bad situation?
It is. It has caused an adverse impact in the morale of the employees and the teachers, and they have articulated that to us. And from the outset, when we first met with the developer Cortec, we articulated that concern since June, I believe somewhere between June 27th, June 30th. We have articulated that not only through our weekly meetings, but as well as in writing.
Okay. Let me talk about the safety of the walkways. We already talked about the cars going back and forth across the walkway. Is there anything else unsafe about the student passageway there that you can tell the hearing officer about?
Mr. Abrams, please speak into the mic. You're quite far away from it. I just want to make sure that we accurately, that would be fine right now.
I feel like a singer.
No, okay. Don't worry. Please continue. I just want to make sure we capture your questions for the transcript.
I think that is good. I was asking you if you knew of anything else that was unsafe about those walkways besides the fact that cars go back and forth across those things at unpredictable intervals. Do you know anything else unsafe about
that? Yes. Sometime last week or a week and a half ago, I was made aware that one of our faculty members, when he was crossing that breezeway or walkway, he was slightly hit by a vehicle, and it was it was not enough, but enough to have him reporting it to one of my assistant principals, and he reported that, and they reported it to me. It was just very unfortunate that nothing occurred, but it happened about, I believe, a week and a half ago.
How long have you been an educator, Mr. Chandler?
I have been with the Guam Department of Education now for 30 years, going on 31.
In your entire professional career, have you ever seen a situation where automobiles can just go back and forth across a dedicated student passageway?
No, this is the first educational facility that we observed to have that situation.
Well, let's talk about whether these walkways are all covered or not. Are there any walkways where students, where students have to go, say, to the cafeteria, that are open to the elements without a roof?
That is correct. When we first given the tour of the facility, I believe mid-July, I quickly observed that there were no covered walkway from the main breezeway or the walkway to the cafeteria. And what that does is that, like this morning, and I have a picture of it, this morning it was pouring wet. So the only way that the students have access to eat breakfast or lunch is storming out from the walkway, and that was like about 200 feet, and then darting into the cafeteria. Of course, when you walk into the cafeteria, it's slippery. And I was made aware again that we may have students who slipped. And I did not check that, or I did not validate that information with our school nurse. But that's what was happening, is that when they needed to have access to the cafeteria, they are exposed to rain and a heavy downpour as of this morning. We also have buildings F and G way out there in the open field. So for students going to these classrooms, again, they have to run the 200 feet, if not more, to gain access into their classrooms. And we also have the other building right next to buildings F and G, in which again the students, and so when I stood in that walkway this morning, again I observed that, and it just so happens, like about 2 weeks ago, that KOAM was there to interview me about something else. And they themselves observed that, and they even took shots of it, and that was aired.
Let me ask you this. What about the teachers? Do they get wet too, or just the students?
Oh no, they get wet, and soaking wet, in fact. And our concern is that, you know, being exposed to the elements, data has shown that our students and staff are more contagious to flu, or will most likely appear to be contagious to flu, cold, and cough. And so the instructional time will be lost as a result of losing our faculty and even our students to flu. And so that's why, to this day, and Cortec is very aware that I have been very, very adamant and persistent, consistent, and to a point where I'm bordering rude, having them to build a covered walkway from the main walkway to these facilities. And they have remained despondent to our request, and we have been requesting it for almost every week that they address those issues.
Well, aside from the let me go back to that health thing one more time.
May I on that cover, where the shelter, when the wind was blowing 2 weeks ago, and even today, one of my instructions and guidance to my assistant principals is that they are to instruct the students to seek shelter into the gym, opening up hallways into the buildings, because presently we have those double doors, and students are not allowed until a certain time when the bell rings, when we open up the double doors. So when it's raining, because the students out in the covered walkways will get wet, and they are exposed to the element even under a shelter, because normally the wind blows and the rain will enter into the covered walkway. So those are some of the major challenges that we have almost every single day. And in fact, on day one, when it rained, when we had the students and parents coming for the parent orientation and the student orientation, and there were no large number, we did not have all 2,300 students in there, it was just a ninth grade orientation. We had to close off sections of the building because one parent slipped, because the walkway was already very wet. Again, wind was blowing hard into the covered walkway, into the shelter, because it's a narrow walkway. It was very, very narrow. And so those are some of my concerns, and we even requested that CoreTech will provide us the a non-skid paint onto those sidewalks, because it's quite slippery when the students are changing classes, and then we have that inclement weather. And I have slept, and luckily I have the rails right next to the gym area when that occurred. So I requested for the non-skip grade paint, but that wasn't expanded to.
Going into the cafeteria from an uncovered walkway in the rain, is that cafeteria air conditioned?
It is air conditioned, and when the students go in there and the teachers, including myself, I was soaking wet this morning. You know, they go in there and it's very, very cold. And one of my policies, and I had to adjust, I had to change that policy. I had to bring in the department chairs, and we had to make some adjustments, is that the students must come to school in full uniform. Nothing should, no other wear can be worn except the uniform. But we had to make those adjustments because of the inclement weather, so the students now are allowed to wear their jackets. During inclement weather, they are allowed to wear their sweaters, contrary to our policy. But I had to make that adjustment because of the condition that we are in at the President John F. Kennedy.
Okay, then. So, while we're on subject of cafeteria, would you call that cafeteria size adequate or inadequate?
It's inadequate, and we have some challenges in there. Like today, next week we're going to have a faculty meeting, and we have asked gate theater to accommodate us. So after school, school ends at 1:20, from 1:40 to 2:40, we will be holding our faculty meetings the gate theater. But I was told by my assistant principal this morning that Mr. Chandra, they are allowing us to use the gate theater for free next week, but the thereafter they will be charging us, because there is not, the cafeteria can hold my entire faculty meeting. The problem there is that the acoustics is so bad that you cannot hear anything. And so there's no other large space for me to bring in my faculty and staff together in one setting, so I can have a good solid meeting with them. So that has been a challenge. The other challenge in the cafeteria is the alcoves, the recess. As you, our students have access to a restroom, but when they enter the restroom, there's that empty space before they move into the restroom. So they enter into the restroom, empty space, and they can lock the doors inside the restroom. And a lot of things could happen. you will, I have seen that, where students bring in students in there, and they can stab students, they can beat the students up to death, probably physical and sexual assaults can occur, and then they have another entrance into the restroom, and again they can lock the doors. So those concerns have already been articulated quite well to CORTEC, and they have not yet responded to those issues. And those are all documented.
What about
the cafeteria? We do not have the cafeteria equipment. The cafeteria equipment, and so because right now we have a Kings, they're using a temporary cafeteria like the sterno to warm up the food, and then we have like an aluminum container where they put the milk and the ice around it. And the Director of Public Health and the Administrator for Environmental Health have already come out to our schools, and they reminded us that this is a very, very temporary measure, and that they'll be visiting us, I believe, in 2 to 3 weeks. And if that is not mitigated, then we may face a closure, because again, public health has made it very clear from the very beginning that the lack of cafeteria equipment will certainly have a major adverse impact in the continuing operation of John F. Kennedy High School. And we all have that discussion with the CORTEC representatives at a sit-down conversation. And every single day, I reminded CORTEC, almost every single day, I just reminded the representative this morning while we were outside waiting, asking him what is the status of the cafeteria equipment.
The size of the cafeteria is adequate or inadequate to feed the students? You have, what, 2,000?
We have 2,300.
And how many can you get in there at a time to eat?
Well, it can accommodate 450 students, anywhere between 350 to 450.
Is that okay, or is it too small, or about right, or what?
You know, if we have two serving lines, we only have one. If there are two serving lines, we can accommodate the students, because they go in there, they eat, and then they leave.
So the size is okay?
We are quite satisfied with the size.
Okay.
Because the participation rate is, we do not have all 2,200 students in there.
So the alcove that you mentioned is a risk to the students' safety then?
That's correct. And we have alcoves and recesses throughout the facility. And blind spots.
But dead zones, blind spots.
That's correct. And we do not have enough adult supervision.
Did I understand you to tell me when I was out there, there are about 20 of these?
Maybe more.
And what's wrong, what's the problem with having these alcoves and recesses and dead zones?
Again, a lot of student misconduct can occur. We have students smoking. Some of them are using those dead spots to do drugs. Physical and sexual assault can occur. There are a lot of dead spots. We have deep alcoves and no cover to prevent students from going into these deep alcoves. Blind spots, they're everywhere, and fights can occur, riots can occur. We do not want to have another newbie case in our campus, but that incident can easily occur because we do not have enough adult supervision, and we do not. Those recesses are just nonsensical. They could easily be covered, and I requested that those alcoves be covered, and that was not addressed.
And why? Why wouldn't the school security be able to monitor these?
Sir, we only have about 13 staff on the floor, and many times these school aides, when teachers are absent, we send them into the classroom.
Why do you do that?
Because we do not have substitute teachers. And so the alternative is to send all these school aides into the classroom to cover classes.
Is there a requirement under the board union contract with the teachers, that contract, to provide audiovisual material previewing?
That's for the school library.
And is that being done?
Well, the library is very slow. In fact, in the original plan, the original layout, is the library is located on the first level. It is a very small space. It's about the size of a, even smaller than a classroom size. We have 46,000 textbooks. We could not put textbooks in that small classroom. So what we did is that we decided, because right there in our building, which is the admin and counseling building, there's a huge general storage room. So what we did is that we relocated the library to the second level of the admin building because it's a larger room. Even after we did that, the library is still very, very small. We have about 28 to 30 computers in their tables. There are not enough space for the bookshelves, not enough space for all kinds of library equipment. To store the library equipment, there are no storage counters, cabinets. And so we do not have not one textbook in the library. So we only have that 27 to 28 computer equipment there. So it's very, very substandard. It does not meet the American Association of School Librarian Standards. And so our students are suffering every day. They are suffering. They need access to the full curriculum of the not only our school library, but as well as the other content areas, the other disciplines, including science. The science where...
Have you ever heard of a high school with no library before?
No, that's the reason why I'm saying that, it is, obviously it is a makeshift facility for a high school program. It is very inadequate, and it does not provide the full curriculum to really carry out a high school program. We do not even have a football field. We do not have a soccer field, per se. And those are classrooms. Those are teeny classrooms. The facilities there are quite substandard. So again, obviously it's a makeshift. It is very, very temporary. And we are hoping that we will be moving in next year by June.
What's the chemistry lab situation? Do you actually have any chemistry labs there?
No, we have major challenges. And in fact, just this morning before I came down here, my chemistry teacher came in with disgust that they tried to store a science lab equipment that not only that it did not meet the standards, the height, it's 30 inch, on a 30 inch, and it should be between 32 to 34. So we could not allow that it be installed. And even if they install, those classrooms are so small, they have no room for the students to classroom experiments and lab activities. There are not enough space for even lab tables. you know, there are no storage rooms, counters where they can put the beakers, the all kinds of the specimens. They do not have storage containers for the laboratory equipment. And the four, there are 15 science teachers. Of 15, only three rooms are designed to provide water. That means about 12 science classrooms, biology, marine biology, and the other science classes do not have access to a sink. What we did is that we divided an art room in half, thus so the science classroom who really needs a sink has this small sink. This is how that small sink is in that biology classroom. You know, the teachers need that water trough because they deal with chemicals, they deal with bases, they deal with specimens. They could not even bring those specimens to the existing facility because of the lack of storage containers or counters or cabinets to store them. There's nothing where they can put them. So the guidance I gave them that whenever they need to bring in the specimens, whenever they need, they have to drive to the old John F. Kennedy into a condemned building and access their instructional equipment, materials, and supplies, bring it to the Tiedemann campus, and once they're done, bring it back. That's unacceptable. Teachers should not be traveling back and forth to access those instructional tools. That's unacceptable. But that's the only alternative that we have right now. And so we are very, very challenged when it comes to the instructional and academic programs of our students. You know, we are better off really being at GW. Because at least we have the storage rooms there.
Have you ever heard of the expression, out of the frying pan and into the fire?
Yes, I have. And
what does that remind you of?
Well, it reminds me of the situation, our predicament, our present situation. We are continuously being a challenge with the making sure that the teachers have adequate and the requisite supplies and materials and instructional tools to actually carry out the full curriculum, which is a requirement under the provision of the board union contract. And if the teachers could not carry out the lessons to its fullness as required by the contract, then we are violating that provision. And then we are shortchanging our students, and they are suffering academically because they did not have full access to the science curriculum, and even in the other disciplines such as PE and our social studies. So if you walk into any of our classrooms up in Tijan, you will see the books on the floor. Some of them are on the floor. The equipment and materials are sitting on the floor. Some of our teachers, which I authorize, because they're afraid that if they leave those equipment, because they're not secured, that they ought to bring it with them home and use their home as a storage room and bring it back again the following day. So you'll be seeing my teachers hauling all the equipment back and forth. And I have them sign in a document that if they lose this equipment, they will be personally held accountable. And some of the teachers didn't want to even sign off because the equipment are coming in. And they said, we don't want to sign off simply because I do not want to be held accountable when the classrooms are not secure. We do not have cabinets. We do not have counters. There are no places there where we can lock them. And so I authorize them to go ahead then and start taking the equipment home. And so it's quite a challenge. It's quite it's physically exhausting for so many of our teachers. And because we do not have enough classrooms, of course, the teachers are moving. Some teachers move four times in the day. The boarding contract, they should not move more than twice. But probably because talking to them and being nice to them and, you know, just collaborating and I'm asking them to adapt. That's the theme. From the very beginning, I told the teachers, you know what, guys? Adapt and overcome. That's the motif that I established from day one. I said, I know many of us will not be happy with the with the situation. The classrooms are smaller. We do not have cabinets. We do not have the counters. There are no places for us to...
Oh, yeah. There's one thing I want to ask you before I forget. When I was out there during your gracious tour of the temporary facility, didn't you mention how they were storing hydrochloric acid?
Yes, you know, the hydrochloric acid and so many other chemical compounds that if they are stored in a very sensitive climate areas, that they have the tendency to explode or cause fires. The storage rooms that were given to the science teachers is, first of all, it's very small, number one. Number two, it's not supplied with an air conditioning unit. These materials, these chemicals require that they are in a cool temperature, climate sensitive areas. They are not. So it's empty. And the guidance again is that they are over at the old JFK. Or otherwise, when we bring them in into a hot storage area, and I was told by the science teachers, by the chemistry teachers, there are two of them, including our physics and our biology, that it will cause irreparable damage, burn, or explosion. And so they couldn't store it there.
So the lack of these storage facilities, is a safety factor along with everything else?
It is certainly a very, very sensitive, very a safety factor. And the other thing, by the way, that I didn't cover is that from a chemistry class to run effectively, they need running water. They need gas lines. They need the hood. And the proper science, we call it lab stations, they do not have that.
Is there any gas line?
There are none.
And in fact, there are no microscopes, no gas lines, no lab tables, no sinks, no running water. In fact, no lab.
That's correct. We only have student desks, student combination desks in those classrooms.
Okay. Thank you for that information. Would you comment on the existence of exhaust systems? Any kind of exhaust system for the chemical vapors or anything?
Well, right, just now, as I mentioned, that really it's almost like one of those general education classrooms. It is not retrofitted for chemistry classrooms. And it's a makeshift. They did what they could. But it is very inadequate for that program to carry out the full curriculum.
So, are there any, is there any amount of hydrochloric acid or other concentrated acids or chemicals at the school? Are you actually storing those things, or do you store them all at the old facility?
Nothing is being stored at the PGM facility. All of them are being stored at the old John F. Kennedy School. So teachers have to go there and retrieve whatever instructional equipment, tools, including specimens.
Now, some of this chemistry equipment, like test tubes and petri dishes and
glass
paraphernalia that they use in chemistry labs, Do you have any idea whether some students who are into drugs actually use the same paraphernalia to take home and manufacture illegal drugs? Is that something you've noticed?
I'm going to object to that.
I make an offer of proof as to the relevance. What I'm going to elicit from the principal here is that because there is no designed storage space for this equipment, these petri dishes, these test tubes, students are free, unless something is done. I understand some of the teachers are storing the stuff at home to prevent this, but kids with illegal purposes in mind will take this very sought-after equipment like test tubes and petri dishes and whatever else they've got there and use it at their home or at some place out of school to manufacture who knows what. I'm not really an expert on this, but you know, there are drugs that are very popular, and this man has told me, and he will testify, that this is another problem, and it interferes with the well-being and the welfare of the students, and I think I'm on solid ground to ask him about this.
The fact that someone might steal some items from the school and take
it
home.
Sure, it's not that someone might steal. For a school to have open areas where this stuff can be accessed by students and taken home for their illegal purposes is outrageous.
Okay, well, I'm going to sustain the objection. Okay, please limit your line of questioning to those matters which are relevant to determining whether substantial interest exists.
If we're dealing with a school, Mr. Kamat.
I've ruled on the objection, Mr. Abrams.
Yes.
Do you have another question for the witness?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I have a lot of questions. So, what is something called probeware, Mr. Shadow?
What I understand from my conversation with the science teachers is that it is a almost like an electronic device, and they also have like a computer which they connect to the probeware, so when the students are doing lab work and activities, they monitor, I guess they monitor they're graphing it. And I had the occasion last year when we were at GW, in one of my, Mrs. Fig was the chemistry teacher, they were doing experiments, and as they work it out, you know, they place this on the beakers, and it's, that will be attached to the probeware to the computer, and starts graphing.
Is there enough space for this probeware computerized activity?
No, there's none.
So where is the software and where are the computers?
My understanding is that the science teachers have that at their homes. They couldn't bring it over because, again, it's a space issue.
Okay. Let's turn to the adequacy of this school for disabled students. What would you say about that? Are you in compliance with the American Disabilities Act or ADA or not?
I'm not an expert, but if a student who's non-ambulatory or even some of the teachers and staff, even our patrons or parents, they do not have access to the second level. Even the parking area, it's not paid. So what Cortec did is that they installed the handicap parking sign, but anyone who's on wheelchair bound will have a very difficult time maneuvering the wheelchair because it's on rocks, it's on gravel. Will have very, very difficult time. My other concern, and I mentioned this again to the staff of Cortec, that we are dealing with high school students and during the height of riots, of fights, students have the tendency to pick up those rocks and they will use them as weapons. So it's gravel and rocks throughout the facility. and if they are not protected, we are exposing our students at a peril of risk in terms of using those rocks again as weapons, and our patrons of the President John F. Kennedy will have a very difficult time maneuvering or even accessing the second level of our school building.
Are there any elevators?
Yes, ma'am.
Are there any rampways leading to the second floor?
Yes, ma'am.
So how do disabled students access the second level?
They cannot. They do not have access to the second level. They have to.
All right.
Yeah.
What about the situation with the art classrooms? About students who take art lessons, are they deprived, or is that fully funded?
Yes. What we did, we had to divide the art classrooms into four. By volume and contract, we can accommodate 24 students in an art classroom. We could not schedule 24 students. We can only schedule 20 because it is too small. They only have one sink. And our classrooms, they need sinks. They need counters, cabinet counters. They need storage space. They do not have that. They do not have it. Even after not having the cabinets or any storage space for their artwork, their equipment, their art supplies, the 20 desks, and if you go up there, you will see the students, it's so narrow. They're so crowded. It's so attenuated that it's even so hard to maneuver going in and coming out. But we have to do it because there are not enough classrooms at the President John F. Kennedy. And I maximize every classroom is being used every single period with the exception of a few. And I have to move teachers around. So the classroom space is very, very small. It does not meet the standard, but we have to do it. So at least every art teacher, there are four art teachers, every art teacher at least will have one sink of running water. And we were not able to fill the 24 as allowed by board union contract.
Does this violate the contract?
It's not a violation of the board union contract because there are less students, but the students do not have access to the full curriculum.
And the full curriculum is mandated by what?
By the board union contract and by our own policy, the content standards and performance indicators clearly state that the students need to have full access to the curriculum in each of the disciplines.
What about the gymnasium? I'm talking about the basketball court specifically. You remember when you showed me that area, right? Do I remember correctly when I say that I saw air conditioning units sitting on the floor just outside of the boundary line of the basketball court?
Yeah, that's correct.
They'd be about a little higher than that imitation brick wall over there and about half the width of that that wall. Is that about right?
Right, almost touching to the ceiling.
Can you give an estimate of the height, Mr. Abrams, for the record?
To me, it looks like about 15 feet by 6 feet.
Okay, please proceed.
And these are located on the floor just outside of the boundary line at each end of the basketball.
That's correct.
And does this constitute a safety hazard?
Most definitely, and that was a compelling concern quite articulated by the PE teachers that during games, during class time, but their concern is that when the students, you know how the ball goes off the line, that it may end up in the, where the air conditioning unit, and it has like a, it's like an empty space, but it has these metals that the students can easily injure themselves. And it's a matter of time before that occurs. It's a matter of time. Because when students are very energetic, very active, they're playing basketball, they're having a lot of fun, the ball slips off their hand, and then as they dart out of the line, that they can easily hit those air conditioning units that are so huge. I mean tons, they weigh tons of it, that they can easily hit and a great bodily harm will occur, and it's a matter of time before that happens. So it's a great concern of mine.
Are there any bleachers there, or how students watch basketball?
No, there are no bleachers. They have to sit on the floor because, the gym is too small for any bleacher to be installed inside the gym. So the students are there sitting down. That's like the lockers, boys and girls locker rooms do not have lockers. So they are exposed to, thievery. So when they are out there playing, someone can easily have access into the locker, and I understand that that has already occurred.
Yeah, when I was out there, I saw a book bag on the floor, often the locker room just outside the bathroom. Is that because of the lack of lockers? They just put their book sacks on the
floor? That's correct. There are no lockers anywhere on campus.
So that floor area where those book bags were sitting on the floor, is that easily flooded from the shower room?
Yes. Again, that was reported to Cortec, and as the students take shower, the water can easily recede into the main locker room, and where the students have placed their bags and books and papers on the floor, so those items can easily be waterlogged. And there's a section there in the boys' locker as the students are showering. They can easily open the door, and they are exposed for public view because, you know, that's where the students, that's the main walkway. So when you open that door, the students are showering, and the students out there will be, because it's the main passageway for students to move from one class to another. So they're easily exposed.
What about the proximity of the electrical lighting to the shower head? Is that a long distance or unsafe?
The ceiling of the shower room is quite low, and so what they have there is the movable shower heads, where, you know, our high school students, they'll do all kinds of magic. I know what they do, and they'll take that, and they can just kind of like, you know, throw it up into the light fixtures, break it off, and throw it up, and, you know, you'll see, you know, it would shatter everywhere. And our good students will do that.
What about the exposure of the electrical circuits in those lights to the shower?
Well, that's
electrical, electrocution risk there?
Yeah, of course. That's quite obvious because of the low ceiling inside the shower room. That can easily occur. It hasn't, but it can easily occur.
Okay. Now, I believe, are you using any of the gym area for classrooms now?
Yes, the entire gym area areas are designed for classrooms.
Well, there are classrooms in the gym area.
Right, the academic classrooms. That's correct.
Was the air conditioning working in both of those classrooms the day that you showed them to me?
I know. I remember one not working.
Are there any windows in those classrooms?
There are none.
Are there any other classrooms in the temporary facility that are also windowless?
I can only remember the music room. I believe it's the music room and the...
What about the chemistry room?
The chemistry, oh yeah, the chemistry classrooms and the physics, they do not have windows.
Totally windowless.
That's correct.
No ventilation at all except for the air conditioning.
That's correct.
Is the tennis court functional?
They're not using it right now because they're still working, and but they're not. They're not using it.
Are you saying the tennis court is unusable?
That's presently, yeah. That's correct.
What's the situation with the volleyball court?
The volleyball court, I believe, that was completed, but they haven't installed the posts for us to use it as a classroom.
Is there anything unsafe about the proximity of the volleyball court and the tennis court and the basketball court? Are they a safe distance from each other or otherwise?
The teachers are reporting that once that becomes operational because of the distance that they can easily hit, the balls can, those two courts, the proximity is too close that they can be interfering from volleyball, the ball jumping into the tennis court, or the tennis balls jumping into the, not jumping, but going, crossing over the volleyball court. So that was an issue. That's an issue.
Is there anything wrong with the teaching atmosphere in the gym because of the noise of the air conditioners?
Yeah, in fact, in many times when teachers need to conduct classes, they have to turn off the air conditioning units so they can hear one another. Here's another challenge. Because the gym, the acoustical sound is so bad, the acoustics is so bad that when they have to speak low for these students to struggle and listen, or they can speak loudly and the noise just bounces everywhere. And you have 4 to 5 classes going on day. The first week, I had the opportunity to observe it, and it's so difficult to hear. There are 5 classes going on in the gym, on the floor, and teachers are trying to carry out instruction, and that was almost very impossible. So I have observed in several occasions where the teachers just needed to take out the students out into the main breezeway to talk to the students because it was very difficult inside the gym.
Going back to the shower room again, I don't think we cleaned that up totally. What about the number of shower heads? Is that adequate or inadequate?
According to the PE teachers, that they consider that to be quite inadequate, and I believe they only have about 8.
How many?
8 or 9. Well, we have about 28 times 5. It's about 104, maybe more. 28 times 5 classes.
And how many do you have?
I believe we have about 8 or 10 shower heads.
How do you handle that?
Some students do not shower.
Does it take longer or?
No, it's because the...
No, for everybody to get cleaned up and
of
shower.
Course, of course.
What about flushable toilets and water pressure? Can you comment on that?
Yes, the water pressure at the second level is very weak, very poor. On day one, I was visited by the superintendent, the members of the board, and it just so happened that one of the board members needed to use the men's room, well, the unisex restroom upstairs, and he came back down and reported it that he would not flush. And so we reported it to Cortec. They came out, and it's very, very unusual for a brand new facility to ask their plungers. The plungers. I have a plunger in my office, in the main office, first level, but I have a plunger. Because somehow the water pressure there is not strong enough to flush it, to adequately flush. I have actually tested, you know, we have the water fountains upstairs, and the student has to practically, the student's lips must practically be right at the opening of the water cooler for them to retrieve water. So the water pressure is quite, it fluctuates. It's quite low. There are some, it's quite problematic. The restrooms in Building J, which is the faculty and staff restroom, is only one. And somehow, almost every day, I'm receiving reports that the restroom is just quite dysfunctional and it's unusable. So we're really down to probably four remotes.
Mr. Sherlock, is the temporary facility at Keegan accredited, or is that yet to be determined?
John F. Kennedy was given 2 years extension accreditation status by WASC. We were just visited when we were over at GW.
That was at GW, not the current?
No.
Okay. Do you expect to get accreditation if you're forced to stay at the existing facility until the next survey?
You know, one of the major criteria by WASC is the resources management and development, and one of the questions asked by WASC would be, to what extent does the school have adequate facility or equipment to sustain the instructional program? And of course our response will be somewhat quite feeble, because again we are faced with major challenges with the present facilities. We have a list, a host of concerns and issues that we to this day, as of this morning, I have given it to CoreTech to please address them. Please address these concerns. These are compelling concerns. The storage container offices, because we do not, because we are so far away, the administration building is so far away from the main, where the main population is. So when there's a fight, the only way to know that there's a fight is someone has to tell us. And by the way, the radios that they gave us, it is so bad that we decided we need to trash it. It's brand new. It is brand new, but very, very poor in quality. That I was told by an assistant principal last Friday that they have taken back our old radio, and that's what we are using. So if they were, if communication is to occur that there's a riot, either someone comes running to us and let us know that there's a fight, or if the radio is working and good, I would say 65 to 75% we are not able to communicate, not with the radios issued to given to us by CoreTech. So we are so removed that many things can occur, and that is my worry, that we are so removed. So what I asked CoreTech from the very beginning, if we could take the storage container offices located at GW, which was my office, and the Office of Student Support Services, who handled discipline and attendance, that those offices or those storage containers be relocated out of GW into the Tizen campus, closest to the main student population, in order for us to provide adequate administrative supervision. And that hasn't occurred.
Mr. Sherlock, I thank you very much for your here.
Thank you.
I'm sure we all have a better idea of what's going on. I have no further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Tang, do you have any direct? Mr. Cunliffe, do you have any cross-examination?
Yes, Mr. Camacho.
Please proceed.
Thank you.
Actually, yeah. Okay. Please proceed.
Mr. Are you a member of the John F. Kennedy Exit Strategy Task Force?
No, I am not.
Did you have any input in what was going to be taking place at the new interim JFK campus?
I had input in June 30th, July 1st.
And before that, you had no involvement?
I was, that's correct. 98% of the time, I was not engaged in that conversation.
The matters that you've testified to about all of the inadequacies of this facility are not at all addressed in the determination of substantial interest. Do you know why?
I am not aware.
Have you gone to the administration, the director, or the board, and asked to be go back to double sessions at GW?
We did early on that when we found out that because it's going through a lot of legislation and changes and decisions by our government leaders and policy makers, the decision that I offered to the superintendent was that I think would be in our best interest, because time is no longer on our side, that we need to consider John F. Kennedy remaining in double session with George Washington High School.
So was that your recommendation or just a discussion?
It was a recommendation.
And when was that?
I believe sometime mid-June, third week of June. I was very worried because of a lot of legislative issues that was going on.
Okay. So this didn't have to do with the temporary facility at Teague, and it had to deal with the legislative issues.
That's correct.
And was that have anything to do with the discussions of changing the procurement and the construction?
I'm sorry, what was the question again?
The legislative issues that were coming up, was that when the legislature was talking about perhaps
right,
doing a new construction project?
That's correct. Okay. That's correct.
Now, you indicated that you weren't part of the task force and you didn't have any involvement until like June 30th or July 1st of 2009.
That's correct.
And did that include the input into what was requested in the request for proposal for being provided for this campus?
I'm not familiar with the request for proposal. The conversation which I initiated, I made the initial contact between me and Cortez, that I really would like to have a weekly meeting, maybe twice a week, so I can better understand the facilities and to give me a copy of the physical layout of TGen in order for me to construct the master schedule and the total number of classrooms and thus the physical layout and the facilities, so I know how that looks like. And that's when I discovered a host of concerns and issues that are instructionally and academically incompatible with the facilities, are somewhat incompatible with the program.
And you indicated that you wanted to or do you want to bring over, I guess, a container office that's over at the GW campus?
That's correct.
Is that Cortex's responsibility to bring that?
They made that commitment. That was our conversation, correct.
So they said they'd bring it for you?
From the very beginning. Even it was occurring in March, April. That was a commitment made by Cortex.
But that had nothing to do with any of the problems that you now foresee, because there wasn't anything happening. The school wasn't in use in March or April.
But it's part of it.
There's also a lot of these issues that you raised. You brought up the Cortex attention, and they said they'll take care of them?
That's correct.
They're going to cover the walkways for you?
They'll cover the walkways. They'll enclose the deep alcoves. They will provide, lockers. But that did not happen.
Hasn't happened yet.
It hasn't happened.
But in order to do that, certainly.
That's right. We spoke about the non-skid paint. There are quite a number of conversations. It's a weekly, twice a week. I have a bundle of notes, and I didn't bring it with me, but about what 80 concerns, maybe 100 concerns.
I don't know if they're lab tables or something, you said were 30 inches high, and this should be 32 or 34 inches?
Between 32 and 34.
Okay. Do you know if that's the specs that was given to Cortex by the government in purchasing these items?
You know, all the procurement and all the ordering of equipment that was done by Cortex.
But the description of that equipment was provided by the government, is that true?
I did not have that information with me. I'm not too sure who made that, who did all that.
Were you aware that in the negotiations of this project that the school said that they were going to go to e-library and they wouldn't need books?
That I mentioned?
No. Were you aware that during the discussions of this project that the administration said they were going to go to an e-library and they wouldn't need library?
I'm not aware. And I'm not too sure if it's when you talk about administration, is it the Department of Education or the Department of Administration?
The people who negotiated the contract on behalf of DOE.
And that's between the Department of Administration and Cortex. I am not aware of that.
With these various problems that you've addressed, is there ever been discussed how it's paid for, or who's going to pay for it?
Yes.
And what is that?
There are quite a number of outstanding projects that are very critical in order for us to provide the minimum educational program for students. One of them, for instance, is we were led to believe that all the classrooms will be equipped with internet. That did not occur. We were led to believe that the cafeteria equipment, that the cafeteria will be fully operational. That has yet to occur. The telephone system, every classroom was supposed to have been equipped with a telephone, and that hasn't occurred. The information later came to the purchasing of the student lockers for each building was supposed to have occurred. That did not occur. Then I was told that if the equipment are not coming in, so to prevent student misconducts and things happening in these deep alcoves, can we at least partition them off? They said, Cortex said, they needed to communicate that information to either to the government of Guam, to a government of Guam agency, or to the governor's office.
And somebody has to pay for this, is that right?
I am going to assume that that's correct.
Okay. The equipment for the cafeteria, do you know what was included in the RFP with regard to cafeteria?
No, I haven't.
Mr. Carlo, could you please talk into your mic as well, just so we can capture your question?
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Since you testified that because of some legislative matters, you had recommended perhaps going back to split sessions at GW. Since that time, have you recommended again that you should go back to GW?
No. When the when that bill was passed, and I believe on June 24th, and signed by the governor on June 25th, then the goal for me is to get ready to open school on August 10th. When we sat down with Cortex, I was led to believe that all of the facility issues is supposed to have been completed by June 30th. We did not open on August 10th because Cortex was not ready for us. We were ready. We were eager. We were excited to open John F. Kennedy on August 10th. Even on the pivotal eve of the opening of the school, I still have faith that we will open John F. Kennedy on that Saturday, August 8th, when I came to John F. Kennedy, because that was on a Saturday, said, I'm still going to open. I will open on Monday. I walked around every building, every classroom, and that's when I made the determination. That's when I contacted the superintendent and I said, ma'am, we need to talk. And she went, what's wrong? I said, I need you to come up here. So she came, Superintendent Underwood came up, and I gave her a tour. And she said, can you still want to open on Monday? And I said, you know, I'm a very proud person, and I'm one person that I will open no matter what. But I have to say that the facility is not ready, and we are going to expose our students to endangerment if I were to open the school on Monday or Tuesday. So I did not even hold the teachers, the first day of teachers orientation, because the cafeteria wasn't ready, the classrooms were still under construction, desks were still not assembled, thick dust everywhere, rocks and equipment everywhere on campus, and I was promised that all those will be mitigated on or before June 30th, and that did not occur. Even up in two weeks, and then the scoring issue was presented to us, and again, that became even a greater challenge. And but the equipment and everything else, the level of readiness of the facility wasn't there at all.
And was this the first time you'd been up there since June 30th?
Yes, June 30th was the very first time, and I initiated the call. I was the one who called Cortex. Can we meet? Can we begin the conversation? Can we start the decision? Can we be allowed to go and inspect the facility, even though it was still under construction?
And just to reiterate, you had no involvement in the review of the RFP with what equipment should be purchased, what desks, what lockers, what storage cabinets. None of that was that you were involved in.
I was not directly involved. My former assistant principal was one of the representatives of the department. I wasn't personally involved.
I have nothing further.
Mr. Abrams, any redirect? Ms. Tang, any redirect?
No, thank you.
Mr. Starkweather, you said you were not involved in the planning of the temporary relocation, but you said someone else was involved?
That's correct. We have an expert task force committee members, and Dr. Hendricks is the chair.
Okay. So was she, how many people were representing the interests of the Department of Education vis-a-vis this temporary location and negotiating with DPW and the contract?
You know what, initially I believe it started out to be somewhere about 20 plus, and then the numbers eventually dwindled to probably 15, 12.
So who was the main representative of the Department of Education with regards to the requirements that Department of Education would need at JF, at the temporary location?
I believe Fred Ishihira, who's our legal counsel, and Steve Patashu, who is the representative from the John F. Kennedy, the official rep to represent the leadership team of John F. Kennedy. Steve Compascio.
And what is his position?
He was the my former assistant school principal. He's now back in the classroom as a language arts teacher.
But to your knowledge, as CORTEC was getting ready to plan the facility, was the Department of Education proactive in expressing its desires as to the types of things that would need?
That's what I understand, yes. Those concerns have been clearly articulated to CORTEC.
To your knowledge, was that in writing?
I do not have it in my possession. I believe Dr. Gail Hendricks, who is the chair, she's one of the witnesses. She probably has all that documentation with her.
Okay. Knowing the problems you have right now at the temporary location, and having just come from double session last school year at DW, given your current problems and the double session, you know, which of the two would you recommend at this point?
You know, certainly I would, for the sake of the educational and the quality of the educational program, I think GW will be a better place for our students academically. Even though it is not an ideal situation, but in terms of accessing the curriculum, I think GW, because it's dealt to be a high school, and so we have the facilities. And it would be far easier for our teachers to easily carry out the instructional program.
Has that concern been articulated to the superintendent?
She's aware of the issues that I am faced with at Pizen, and that's why I continue to, you know, I've been asking Joshua Tenorio, who is the main contact person, I've been asking that we need to meet a minimum, even after we open school, a minimum of once a week. Just today while we were sitting out there, I took advantage of his presence and said, please, Josh, please, we need to meet at least once a week, every week, because there are a lot of issues that you and I need to resolve. In fact, in one of my emails, and I can provide that documentation, please do not abandon us. I have been emailing, I have been requesting a lot of things, and you have not responded. Please do not abandon us. And I'll present that documentation, that email to you if you wish. But those are my challenges. I need to meet with Cortec once a week.
Has he responded to you?
Well, today he said that we'll try to meet, I believe, Thursday morning at 10 o'clock. And I told him, can it be every Thursday?
And what about your concerns? Are they also being communicated elsewhere within the Department of Education, like to either the super, or to Ms., I think,
Arlene Pinto?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Every communication that I have with Cortec, that has been articulated with, I provide copies to the district office.
Okay. So, going back to the delay of the school, so here it is August, so it's been over a month now since, I guess, some of those concerns were outlined by you. Any indication from Cortec as to when they will complete, or if they will do those tasks?
No, because the communication hasn't occurred. A lot of it is through email, and even with that, they have slowed down. Between June 30th and August 24th, August 23rd, we have solid communication. We know what needs to occur. We know what is the goal. We know what projects need to be completed, needing to be addressed. But after we open, the communication, the gap has really widened.
Okay.
Yeah.
So up until school opening, things were running.
That's correct. We have all these things structured, and we know exactly when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen, what will be the methodology, and all that. But when we opened, that's when they were responding to some of our concerns. But as the weeks go by, that has lessened. And I've been requesting though for at least a weekly meeting, at least one.
You stated earlier the school was delayed because of, certain
Because Cortec wasn't ready to open, the facilities were very inadequate.
So what caused the school to be open? What did they do that made you feel that you were ready to open the school? What additional things transpired?
Well, because some of the classrooms are still under construction.
Mm-hmm.
They were still plastering.
Mm-hmm.
Desks were not assembled. The cafeteria equipment were not in place. We couldn't open at the school without the regulatory agencies were coming in that Saturday to try and again re-inspect whether or not it is feasible to open.
Mm-hmm.
And wires are still exposed, so I told them that they need to take those caps and those electrical wires, those telephone, the wires are sticking out. I do not know whether they are live wires or they're telephone wires, but they have to be capped. So those were still there as of August 8th, and I said, under no condition am I going to allow 2,300 students to come in and be exposed to this condition. And even if I want to open on August 10 or August 11, I do not know where to put four classes, because four or five classrooms are still under active construction.
So when did GSK open?
Well, August 24th.
Okay, so at that time, were most of the concerns that you had raised earlier, were most of them completed?
Partial. Some of them were addressed. At least the classrooms were addressed. At least the desks were assembled and were installed. At least they were swept, mopped, and dusted.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was thinking, this is just not right for the students to come in. And desks are not even, the floor, the classrooms were not even swept and cleaned.
Mm-hmm.
So it was done during that weekend before we opened, supposedly on August 11th.
You said school opened on August 24th.
Right.
Okay. Since August 24th, has CoreCut been back to do any additional work that you had requested previously?
They are addressing emergency requests from us, like when the power was out, it tripped, and there were no. The power was not energized in all of the buildings except the administration building. The fire alarm system was going on and off. The telephones were not, they were down. They respond to emergencies, and we're telling them the bell system was off. There were quite a number of issues that require their immediate attention, otherwise we will be operationally crippled, and it will really hurt the students. And so we had to call them and say, you need to come in, you need to do this, like right now. Otherwise, we have no way to tell the students that the bell is wrong. There's no way for us to tell them that the bell, that now block one has just ended, go to your next block, to your next class. And so they came in and they did their best to address many of the issues. Classrooms are without power, but they were there working. But all the other things have still yet to be addressed. There's just so many things that they haven't done. The book room, for instance, we have about good 20 to 40,000 books. And they're still on the floor, the shelves are in, they just came in. But that book room is not air conditioned. So you know what that means? That means that it's a matter of time before mold and mildew will grow in that room and will ruin over 20 plus thousand books. It's a matter of time. So I'm asking teachers, just take them out of the book room and store them in your classroom, but they're saying that we do not have space. We do not have space. And the bookshelves that they gave us, it's this high and this wide. The books, the one shelf per classroom. That is unacceptable. And I looked at it and it's very poor quality. We're very grateful, but very poor quality. And it's just unacceptable. And you know, and the teacher, and here's what I told them, because they every day they express their disgust and their discouragement. And here's what I told them. The theme of John Kennedy this year is adapt and overcome. Adapt, every faculty agenda, I wrote down adapt and overcome. Every messages that I wrote to the teachers, adapt and overcome. Make do with what we have. It's all that we got.
Under the lease agreement with CoreCut and the government of Guam, they're supposed to receive approximately $4.5 million. There doesn't seem to be any penalty in the lease agreement. So what recourse does the Department of Education have if CoreCut fails to...
Because I did not participate in that, I really do not have any information. I really do not have it. Yeah. I cannot respond to that. I do not have a copy.
Okay. then just to reiterate my previous question, given the current condition of the temporary location of JFK, and given you were there as principal when you were in double session.
That's correct.
Okay. Given those, so you're aware of the double session situation as well as the current situation right now, although it's not quite, or just a little over a month old. Given those two scenarios, which of the two would you recommend to the superintendent at this time?
Instructionally, George Washington has the facility, and operationally, it will be far superior than the present situation. I have asked the teachers and the students and the staff and the parents that we need to work together and let's look at what we got and try to work with what we have under very austere and very, very challenging conditions, because that's what we got. Madam Auditor, that these decisions I did not make alone. When issues are presented to me, my leadership philosophy has always been this. I will bring my parents, and I have a very strong parent group. I bring my student leaders, and I bring my teachers together, and I will present the issues. And then I ask them, how can we resolve these issues, and how can we overcome them? That has been the leadership style that I have engaged my faculty and my school community. And so I'm quite a challenge right now to respond to them, because but as an educator, instructionally and operationally, it would be more beneficial for the students to be at George Washington High School.
We have at least a year to figure out how to resolve the situation, because the government of Guam is already committed to the payment of that money. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Mr. Chairman, I have one or two questions to because of the questions by the public auditor.
I'll allow you a very brief redirect, please.
Ms. Sharkaloff, a lot of your responses to the public auditor, and indeed to Mr. Cunliffe, addressed the inattention of CORTEC to certain inadequacies of the school. I ask you this. If CORTEC were to rectify all those things that you're talking about, like the non-skid, the covered walkways, and some of the other things that you said you wanted CORTEC to do, would there still be, if they rectified all those things, would there still be in your mind a substantial interest in getting the procurement process going and constructing the new JFK facility, or would there be no pressure to do that anymore?
No, we need to move forward with the construction of the new John F. Kennedy, because that's a temporary fix.
But why? If CORTEC were to fix all those things that you were talking about, why would there be a substantial getting
the... And here's the reason why, because those classrooms are substandard. Those classrooms do not have the requisite resources to carry out to provide the teachers the basic requisite instructional tools to carry out the full curriculum.
Even if CORTEC did what you wanted them to do, would there be a chemistry lab?
The chemistry lab will be inadequate. Even if those are, I'm just asking for the basics.
Would there be enough space in those small chemistry classrooms for a lab?
No.
CORTEC wanted to install them.
No, there will be, the space.
In the library.
They have to.
CORTEC did everything that you want them to do. Would the library still exist or not exist?
Sir, 2 weeks ago, in collaboration with the University of Guam, who's helping us put together the grant for the ARRA funding, I requested if we can expand buildings. And the reason why I asked that question, his name is Mr. Sammy Perez. from UOG 2 weeks ago. The reason I asked, because I was thinking, can we expand the library, can we expand the chemistry, can we expand certain classrooms in order for the teachers to be more effective in the delivery of instruction? And of course he said no, because that is not allowable by the stimulus package.
So Mr. Shargaloff, am I correct in understanding, and are you advising the hearing officer and the public auditor that even if Cortec did everything you wanted them to do, there would still be a need for substantial interest in completion of the new facility the earliest possible?
That is correct. That is correct.
Absolutely. If you put a Band-Aid on everything else, would the students still be suffering?
Without equivocation, the government needs to move forward in the construction of the new Janus Kennedy. Otherwise,
any doubt in your mind about that?
No doubt. Otherwise, our students will continue to suffer every single day, instructionally suffer. And parents and my school community needs to know, and I have been providing them that information every time we met.
I have no further questions.
Ms. Tang, any redirect? Mr. Cullough, any requests?
Just briefly. What do you understand substantial interest to be?